Welcome to another edition of Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling Show. I'm Anthony T. In this edition, I'll be talking to Jackson Parisio about his new film, Ash, which is a film that's inspired by the Silent Hill video game franchise. He'll be here to talk about the film, as that film is about ready to enter production. And yes, CM Punk takes over this podcast. Seriously. I will talk about the AEW rumors with CM Punk and Daniel Bryan in just a bit. And in What's Anthony T Watching, I will review a film that features CM Punk in a small supporting role. That's right, you might not know this, but CM Punk has a new movie out, even though his role is small. And I will get to all that, but first, the news. It appears that Tim Burton is back, as he's getting ready to produce a live-action series centered around Wednesday Addams. Yes, that Wednesday Addams from the Addams Family. It's going to be, I think, pretty much her own show and not a full-blown Addams Family show from the looks of it, as the series is being titled Wednesday. And it's set to star Jenna Ortega from The Babysitter, Killer Queen in the upcoming Scream reboot. And they also had some new casting for it too, as Catherine Zeta-Jones will be playing Morticia in the series, and Luis Guzman playing Gomez in this Addams Family series. They are slated to be guest stars for the series, as this is a series that's going to focus on Wednesday Addams, hence the title Wednesday. Now, I'm kind of interested in this series, seriously. I love the Addams Family. Whether it's the animated film that was released a couple years ago, or the live-action films released back in the 90s, I really like the Addams Family a lot. I'm kind of excited for the series, as this is probably going to be good because this is Tim Burton producing it. And Tim Burton usually does some really good stuff. Whenever his name is attached to it, it's usually a guaranteed good film. So I'm kind of excited for this series. As Bloody Disgusting has described the series as a supernaturally infused mystery, charting Wednesday Addams' years as a student at Nevermore Academy. The plot synopsis looks very good. It's going to be an interesting series. I have to say, it's going to be a different type of Addams Family series, but I'm kind of down with it because Tim Burton's involved, and the series will be on Netflix, so usually Netflix has done no wrong when it comes to original series. Look at Stranger Things. It's still being talked about even though season 4 hasn't been released yet. And oh, by the way, that's coming out in 2022. But this is a series I'm actually looking forward to, as I'm a big Addams Family fan. So, it'll be an interesting concept. I can't wait for this series to air on Netflix. There's been no date on when it's supposed to be, as this is right now in the casting phase. So, probably, I would expect it probably next year sometime. Let's move on to a film that I want so bad, but will probably never happen. Now, file this under I never knew I really, really want this film until someone came up with the idea for it. A lot of people might not know this. Besides horror and wrestling, I love comic book films. I love all the Marvel films, all the Marvel TV series, all the DC films. Kind of. They've been better in recent years. When I first started off, they sucked. I'm kind of into all of them, except maybe the 9.5-hour cut of Zack Snyder's Justice League. Hey, it's actually 4 hours, but it might as well feel like 9.5 hours. Because it's ridiculous to do a 4-hour comic book film all at once. Well, Marvel did it, but they divided it into two. Zack Snyder's Justice League, I don't know. I can't do 4 hours for a film that's gonna go nowhere. It's like a waste of my time, but I digress as we're getting back on topic here. During an interview with The Hollywood Reporter talking about season one of Loki with director Kate Herron, the interviewer from The Hollywood Reporter ended the interview saying, "Well, congratulations once again, Kate. And if you do return to the MCU someday, please make a Miss Minute slasher film, since she's utterly terrifying." And Kate Herron replied, "I would love to. That would actually be my dream." Now, it seemed jokingly, but now I have to come in and really beg for this, because that kind of sounds like a cool premise for a slasher film. A cartoon clock killing people. That is something I wouldn't mind seeing. If you've seen Loki on Disney Plus, you know who I'm talking about. Miss Minutes is this orange clock that is like a computer over at the TVA that looks like an animated clock. So if you take a look at it, like I teased on a couple of my social media pages for the podcast, it's a frightening look. I'll give it that. But I never knew I really wanted a Miss Minute slasher film until the interviewer from The Hollywood Reporter brought it up. Now I want this film. I'm serious. I want this film so bad. Come on, Kevin Feige, who's in charge of Marvel films. This would be a great opportunity to do something way outside the box. Seriously. I wouldn't mind seeing this film. A film that revolves around a cartoon clock killing people. I swear, you cannot make this up. Literally. Now I want this film. Since the reporter from The Hollywood Reporter brought it up in an interview. I want this film so bad. It probably would be so dumb, but it would probably be so good. Come on, you could probably make this film for like $20, $30 million. Seriously, Marvel. I know it would probably go way off the MCU, but who cares? A film killer clock would really be something. I'm sorry. That idea has really got my interest, and I hate it that it came from a reporter and not a director or screenwriter. You can take The Hollywood Reporter, because I really now want this Miss Minute slasher film. And so that film would literally be bonkers, considering it would fit inside the MCU in some weird way. But I can always dream. It would be a cool premise, though, if you think about it. Okay, enough with this. Now, before I get into wrestling news, you're expecting me to have thoughts on Bray Wyatt being released by WWE. Well, if you want to hear my thoughts on Bray Wyatt being released by WWE, head on over to YouTube in another edition of Anthony T's Uncensored, where yours truly has said this bleeping wrestling promotion. That's right, WWE is a wrestling promotion. Even though WWE doesn't act like a wrestling promotion, as they think they're sports entertainment, but they are a wrestling promotion. Let's not make the mistake, people. They are a wrestling promotion. Check out the video on Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling Show YouTube channel. Because I'm not spending any time here, because I still can't figure out why the hell WWE released Bray Wyatt. I have a theory, but watch the YouTube video. Because basically, I'm not going to get into this, because literally, this pissed me off as both a wrestling fan and a horror fan. And I cannot do a PG rant on this. I'm sorry. I was just so angry about this that I had to do a video and bring back Anthony T's Uncensored. Now, this gets the big story that's been running around the last month or so. There are rumors, I'm just gonna say it, rumors that both CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, a.k.a. Bryan Danielson, are heading to All Elite Wrestling. I'm just putting out rumors, but if you look what's been happening so far, AEW books a show at the United Center for August 20th. That show is already sold out. A lot of people are expecting a major surprise at that show. And quite frankly, I think this is going to happen now. Because there is no reason why AEW booked the United Center 8 weeks out if they weren't planning on doing something big for this second show, Rampage. This leads to the theory that CM Punk is going to be in AEW. They've already been teasing this through various promos. Darby Allin teased in one of his promos. MJF teased in one of his promos. Kenny Omega was wearing a Cookie Monster shirt, which is what I think CM stands for, according to Phil Brooks. So, there is a lot of evidence there that CM Punk is coming to AEW, and very soon. Because, why would you be teasing it through your various stars if it ain't happening? Seriously, why run a show at the United Center and book it a month beforehand if it ain't happening? I truly believe CM Punk is coming to AEW, and it's going to be very soon, before All Out. I expect his first AEW match to be at All Out or the Rampage taping in Chicago. Now to Bryan Danielson, a.k.a. Daniel Bryan in WWE. There are rumors going around that he may debut for the company when they have their New York show in late September. Now, I really think this is happening, too. Because there's been a lot of chatter saying they've both signed contracts. Him and Punk. There haven't been any teases. But this the one thing that I know, and there's been a lot of rumors saying that Bryan Danielson, a.k.a. Daniel Bryan, wants to do. He wants to wrestle in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And the only way he's going to do that if he signs with AEW or signs with New Japan Pro Wrestling. But since New Japan Pro Wrestling right now is not signing any foreigners due to the pandemic and everything, the only option is AEW. And if the rumors are suggesting that he already signed with AEW, he's going to be a great fit for AEW. I really think so. Because this is a guy who can work with a lot of the younger talent in this promotion. He did this in WWE. He helped work with some of the younger talent like Drew Gulak, Cesaro, and Shinsuke Nakamura. So, this is definitely a big get for AEW in the long term. Because this guy has a mind for the wrestling business. This is a guy you can have work with the likes of Darby Allin, Jungle Boy, MJF, those people. He's got a great mind for the business. And it showed on SmackDown with the names that I just mentioned. And if he was going to sign with WWE, he would have done it by now. The fact that Bryan Danielson, a.k.a. Daniel Bryan, hasn't signed with WWE, meaning he's probably moving on from the company. He probably realized that this past WrestleMania was going to probably be the last time he'll ever get a chance to main event a major pay-per-view in WWE, so I could see this as a big signing for AEW. A signing that would really help AEW as he can work with the younger talent while still being in the upper mid-card main event scene in that promotion. Look at the matches Dan Bryan can have. I just said MJF, Jungle Boy, Darby Allin. Ethan Page is another one I would like to see. Wheeler Yuta, who recently joined the promotion, that would be a very good match, as he's been tearing it up on the independent wrestling scene, and now has joined AEW, from the looks of it. So there's a lot of great matches for Daniel Bryan in AEW. You got Omega. You got Malakai Black, who recently squashed Cody on a recent Dynamite episode. Man, did that character look great. I wish he was that character in WWE. But getting back to the topic, I don't think we saw those two pair up in WWE. That would be a really good match. Bryan Danielson, a.k.a. Daniel Bryan, can be an asset for All Elite Wrestling. Because he can really help groom the younger talent and work with them. So, if these rumors are true, this would help get more eyes on All Elite Wrestling. Let's face it, All Elite Wrestling is probably the best wrestling promotion out there in the United States right now. Hands down. Dynamite goes by fast. It's an entertaining show. And it's just something you want to watch every week without being forced to watch. I'm really hoping these rumors are true. Not because of my AEW bias, because it would really energize this promotion and really, hopefully, give WWE creative the kick it needs to put on very good shows. I saw SmackDown recently, and I was kind of bored for most of it. Sure, it had a good beginning and end, but the middle of the show did not scream, come back next Friday. And that's why I like AEW, because Dynamite always makes you want to come back the next Wednesday night. And that's what a wrestling program should be, and that's the news. Besides Anthony T's horror show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Phil Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast. Halloween Boutique, Psychotronic Reviews. And Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Welcome back. Now, if you have been listening to the show pre-pandemic era, you might know I like to talk about Comic-Cons on this podcast. I talk about Rhode Island Comic-Con pretty much every year on this podcast. Yours truly recently went to another Comic-Con that isn't Rhode Island Comic-Con. As yours truly went to Mohegan Sun for about 4 days for Terrificon. But I got there like a day earlier because I wanted to gamble a little bit, take in a comedy show. First day was fun. Got a lot of walking in as well. Then the convention hit on Friday afternoon. To explain the venue in which Terrificon happened would do it no service, because the Mohegan Earth Expo and Convention Center was huge. This literally makes the Dunkin' Donuts Center and the Rhode Island Convention Center look like an office building. This was so huge. It was like a long walk from the entrance to all the way down to the convention hall. You had the panel room, like, I would say about halfway there. That's how big this venue was. And to spend 3 days at that venue was very good. Because I have to admit, that is just a world-class venue. I wish we had something here in Rhode Island like this. But we don't. We just have the Dunkin' Donuts Center and the Rhode Island Convention Center. The convention for me started Friday when first day. I figured walk around a little bit, then get in line to meet Michael Rooker. His line was huge throughout the weekend. I was like by there a couple times during the weekend. It's amazing. He probably was the biggest celebrity at that convention. He had the biggest line. He's also a very charismatic person to be around with. And he's probably one of the most fun people you will see out in the convention circuit. Because this guy literally walks through the convention door right to his booth. He doesn't go through the curtain. He just literally goes right through the front door all the way to his booth. And he is having so much fun. I got to meet him. Very cool guy. Very funny guy as well. That's what you want when you meet celebrities. Someone who's going to be a fun person to be with. And really makes you feel happy. Michael Rooker is the best. I'm surprised I did not get him the first two times when he was in Rhode Island, quite frankly. But I did get him first here in Terrificon. That was a very cool moment. I enjoyed it. Then next, I met Scott Patterson from Saw 4 through 6. Another very nice guy. Didn't have the line at the time because I went on a Friday. But his line picked up during the weekend because he was also on a popular show called Gilmore Girls. So, Friday, I got Michael Rooker. I got Scott Patterson from the Saw franchise. And I also got an autograph from John Carpodice, who is a character actor who's been in such films as Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, Speed, and many other films. Hey, I love character actors. If I can identify you in one scene, then I will probably get your autograph. And I could definitely get John Carpodice because I remember him as the guy who got blown up on the bus in Speed, which started the whole film pretty much. You know, the film with Keanu Reeves is about his character trying to stop another bus from blowing up and trying to get Dennis Hopper, who is great in that film, Speed, which is an action film, for those who might not know. The film also starred Sandra Bullock. It's a great action film, and probably one of the great action films of the 90s, along with True Lies and countless others. But we are getting way off track here, as this is a horror and wrestling podcast. Then afterwards, you're surely got my photo op with Michael Rooker. You've seen it on the social media pages. Very nice guy still. That was fun to do. As I always like to get photos of celebs as well. But Michael Rooker did have a table op, so I decided to get the pro photo op. Then Saturday comes along. Yours truly walks around a little bit, then goes into Darby Allin's line, because I really love Darby Allin as a wrestler. Met him, very nice guy. Then I went to see Ty Conte, another very nice person. Then I decided to walk around, pick up some comic books. Because there were some really good horror comics that I picked up at the convention. I was over at, I believe, Brandon and Brian Fram's booth. Saw this cool comic called Vampire PA. Figured I'm a fan of vampires. I'll check this one out. Then, all of a sudden, I stumbled on to starring Sonya Devereaux. And once I found this comic, I knew this was an instant buy. Because the comic has an introduction by legendary B-movie filmmaker Fred Olin Ray. So, that was definitely going to be something I would pick up. I wasn't planning on picking it up, but since Fred Olin Ray is writing the introduction, might as well. And this series called Starring Sonya Devereaux, The Complete Movie Collection Volume 1, is about a B-movie actress in various kinds of films, whether it be action, horror, westerns. Starring Sonya Devereaux was definitely one I had to pick up just because Fred Olin Ray's name is on it, and I love Fred Olin Ray's films, so that was definitely worth a purchase for me. Then yours truly went to the Michael Rooker panel. Now, if you ever go to a Comic-Con or Horror-Con and Michael Rooker is doing a panel, always go to that panel. Because Michael Rooker is a riot. I caught maybe like the last half of it. But still, it's just such a riot. And it's one of those panels where you probably might want to stand up for. Because Michael Rooker is going to go all over the place. Literally. It's just such a fun panel. And one of the highlights for me this weekend, quite frankly. Then I also met one of the co-creators of Random Acts of Violence, Justin Gray, who co-wrote the graphic novel, which got turned into a feature film, which is playing on Shudder. Very nice guy. Then Sunday comes along. First thing I do is mosey around the convention hall. Then I find out that there is copies of Random Acts of Violence being sold over at Jimmy Palimonte's booth. He's the other co-creator of Random Acts of Violence. I saw the book there, so I picked it up, even though I knew this guy was having a big line all weekend. I decided to just do that first, pick the book up, have him sign it, which I did. Talked about how different his graphic novel is compared to the movie. Was a nice guy. Talked just a little bit because his line was very big, as he's a popular comic book personality. So I wanted to make it quick and everything because there's a big line and I don't want to take anybody's time. You know what I mean? So then afterwards, I went to Sammy Guevara's line. Very nice guy. Took a couple pictures. One PG, which you saw on the social media page. And no, you will not see the R-rated picture. The one with the finger salute. You will not see that. Not on my podcast page. Sorry. I'm trying to keep everything PG and everything. Or PG-13. So I'm not going to post that picture on the show's official social media platforms. Then after I got his autograph, went around, shopped a little bit, picked up a couple of interesting comic books, then went to the Ross Marquardt panel halfway through, asked a question there about his role in Avengers Infinity Wars and Endgame, then had lunch, then went to the AEW panel. Let me tell you, the AEW wrestlers they had there were some of the nicest people you had at that convention. It was a really good panel. Then I went back one last time to the convention hall. Picked up the NECA Trick or Treat figure with Sam. Loved that character from that film. Then it was off back to Rhode Island. Overall, I really enjoyed Terrificon. This was a really fun show to be at. Mitch Hollick, the show's organizer, did a very good job making sure everything ran smoothly, a lot of space, had some fun cars from various films there as well. Overall, a very fun atmosphere, which I like to see in conventions. I don't want to be sitting there yelling and screaming about, oh, they can't move lines or we're having overcrowding issues. I kind of never had that with this convention, which is very good because I like to have a fun time, and I had a very fun time that weekend over at the Mohegan Sun Earth Expo and Entertainment Complex. It's a huge building, and I have to admit, this is a great con to go to. If you're in the New England area, or you're looking to travel to some very good comic cons, definitely go to Terrificon, because that is such a great convention. I wish I could go every year, seriously. But this is such a great convention to go to. If you're in the Connecticut area or wanting to travel down to Comic-Con, definitely go to Terrificon next year. It's such a great con. I haven't decided if I'm going back next year, as right now I have no con scheduled for next year, as I'm trying to play it by year because I don't know what the con landscape is going to look like here in the New England area next year. So I'm not making any commitments to any cons. Maybe except Rhode Island Comic Con, obviously, since it's right near in my area, so that's probably the only Comic-Con that's on schedule for next year. But if you really want to go to a very well-run convention, Mohegan Sun next year, and go to Terrificon, as this was probably one of my favorite Comic-Cons that I've ever been to, seriously, as this was such a fun time next year. So I'm not making any commitments to any cons, maybe except Rhode Island Comic-Con, obviously, since it's right near in my area, so that's probably the only Comic-Con that's on schedule for next year. But if you really want to go to a very well-run convention, Mohegan Sun next year, and go to Terrificon, as this was probably one of my favorite Comic-Cons that I've ever been to, seriously, as this was such a fun time from start to finish. Every day there's a family struggling with hospital bills to care for their sick child who is fighting an illness. There's a woman who is fighting breast cancer and is having trouble making ends meet while paying for their treatment. And there are burn victims that are going through treatments to heal their deep wounds. There is a charity in the horror community that helps these people. Scares That Care is an organization that helps families deal with the bills for their child. They help women get the treatment they need to fight breast cancer, and they help people who are dealing with severe burns get the help they need to heal. Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer organization and 501c3 nonprofit charity that is dedicated to helping these people in fighting real monsters. To find out more information or to donate to Scares That Care, you can go to www.scaresthatcare.org. Every donation helps Scares That Care fight real monsters.
Hey guys, this is Steven Christina. I am the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well then look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John! Time for something new and improved!
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling Show. I am here with actor, director, Jackson Parazio to talk about his new film, Ash, which is currently in pre-production. How are you doing today, Jackson?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Anthony, for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, how did you get into filmmaking?
Oh, boy. Well, getting right into it, girl. So I have been into filmmaking since I was a child. My parents got me a camera when I was the age of 12, and me and my friends were filming movies in our house. Funny enough, the first movie we ever filmed was in, like, 2002, and we're just, like, a bunch of sixth graders. And ironically enough, the movie was called The Happening. And we made three of those movies, The Happening 1, 2, and 3. So I feel like those tapes eventually got leaked and M. Night Shyamalan probably stole my idea. I'm just kidding. But no, I've always been interested in storytelling. I think before, you know, picking up a camera, it was just grabbing a pen or a pencil and just writing down my crazy ideas on paper, and eventually that translated into taking those ideas that I had into film. You know, what can we do with a camera?
I noticed you've done a lot of music video work. What drew you to the music video field?
Well, when I first started making videos, it was me and my best friend Forrest, who is also a part of this project as well. And I've known him since second grade. And after our, like, middle school and early high school days of us just, like, fooling around with the camera, I started getting into hip-hop and into making music. And I established myself around a team of other artists and musicians. And one of the things that, as a musician, that you look for is a photographer or someone who is capable of handling videos. So at the time, when we were making music, we were watching some of these other rappers at the time, like, put out these really cool videos that inspired us. My friend AJ Slade at the time, he was putting out some amazing videos, and that inspired me to go up to all of my friends and being like, listen, let's all throw in our money together and invest in like a really nice camera so we could start making videos for ourselves. And because I had the most experience with the camera and it was, I was the one who initiated it, I became the mastermind of making music videos for my friends. So that's really kind of how the music video aspect started. You know, we were all musicians and we all wanted music videos. We couldn't afford anyone to do it, so we taught ourselves how to do it.
You also go under the name Iko the Rain Man. How did you come up with that persona?
Oh boy, that is a question that I get asked very frequent. I have to thank my friend Leon for helping me sort of construct that name together. But Iko was a reference to an old PlayStation 2 video game called Eco, or Iko, depending on how you want to pronounce it, but it was ECO. So I took that, and then I was trying to add the hip-hop flair to it, and I was just like, oh, what if I was named Icon for short, which is spelled I-K-O-N? And then I thought that was stupid, and then I just kept the name Iko. And then Rain Man represents the silly, nerdy style that I became known for. So Iko is my name, and the Rain Man sort of represented my style musically, and that was influenced from Eminem. And at the time, when I was making music, I couldn't really decide on a name if I was going to be called Iko or the Rain Man. So my friend Leon just combined the two together, and it just stuck. So I have become known as the online persona Iko the Rain Man, as the nerd critic slash rapper, cinematographer, now filmmaker. Go figure.
Speaking of filmmaking, you have a new film project in pre-production called Ash. Tell me about the film.
Ash is a spiritual successor to Silent Hill in regards to lore. It is an indie horror thriller that I am self-financing and working with a couple of distribution companies to be able to get it out on Amazon exclusively. It's a short film. The movie will range around 45 minutes. It's a self-contained story. Although it is greatly inspired by Silent Hill, it is not actually a Silent Hill movie due to licensing rights. This idea came about me wanting to do a Silent Hill fan film, but didn't want to get caught in the trap of making a fan film. You know, not being able to add your own original ideas to it and eventually sell it. So we decided to make it a Silent Hill movie all but in name, if you will.
This film is inspired by the popular Silent Hill video game series. What drew you to the series and what gave you the inspiration of those games that it made you want to make a film similar to the video game franchise?
Absolutely. That's a great question. Silent Hill 2 probably was the one that really drew me in with its atmosphere and its psychological dive into the mind of someone who is just tormented and very disturbed and has their own issues. I really was just fascinated by the idea of being in a hell that manifests your persona and your psyche and your psychological issues. And it just took the aspect of the human mind and made it scary. The games are beautiful. I think they serve the potential to be very poetically filmed movies from a cinematography standpoint. And there's just a lot of room there for character exploration. And that was what drew me into Silent Hill. I really enjoyed the first movie. I just rewatched it like 2 nights ago. I think the first movie is very beautifully filmed, But I think what Eric falls short is on the story and really homing in on the psychological aspect of what Silent Hill is. And that's really what drew me in. It's just its atmosphere, its tone, and its character dives that they do.
Now, besides Silent Hill, the film is also inspired by other films. Can you elaborate more on that?
Yes. One of the things that I wanted to do when creating this film was to limit the amount of locations that my characters are in to be able to keep the budget low. So I look at films like The Ritual, The Blair Witch Project, Predators, and Gretel and Hansel, the 2019 version, as inspiration for films of characters who are stuck in a location that requires a lot of acting and tense atmosphere to be able to drive the plot forward. So those were the movies that I looked at that kept the cast very small. The Ritual was very much one of the main inspirations for that movie. I think the movie is absolutely beautiful. They filmed that somewhere in Europe. I can't think of the country name right now. But when I saw that movie, I said I wanted to do something like that. And The Ritual, in its own way, that movie, which is available on Netflix, kind of reminds me of Silent Hill, with some of its... Every time I think of Silent Hill, I think of spooky mountains and fog and people wandering in the woods now. So that was the first movie that inspired the look and main feel for Silent Hill. Ash. That and Gretel and Hansel.
Why did you choose to do a short film instead of a feature film?
That's another excellent question. What we wanted to do, and I think as a filmmaker, I need to be able to see what I can do at a small, condensed size. I think trying to do a feature film right out of the gate, especially when I've transitioned from doing, you know, commercials to music videos and ads and product startup commercials for clients and stuff. I think jumping into a feature film is a greater task. So, and considering that we're self-funding this film, I think it's a much cheaper to film something that's a short film first, see how you do, learn your mistakes, learn where your strengths are, and also create a proof of concept so when you do go and make your feature film, you have a little bit more experience. And I think that's where I was trying to go for. I didn't want to eat too much. I wanted to start off small with an appetizer and then work my way up to the full course meal.
What was the screenwriting process like trying to create a screenplay that fits your vision and your budget?
It was very difficult. When you pick up a pen and you start writing, you know, there is no budget. Your imagination could take you anywhere. So we had to literally consolidate the idea of let's make a movie that's within one location. And that's when we started to, you know, talk about some of the movies that I brought up earlier and how they told a very interesting story that was within a limited amount of locations. We knew that Wyoming was going to have a lot of pretty hills and mountains, and I'm like, let's do something where a bunch of kids go camping and something really weird happens. So the original script was about four people who wandered into the mountains, had a UFO sighting, and that UFO sighting caused them to be stuck in the woods, and they had to figure out a way to leave. So from there, we were introduced to the cabin, which was brought on by one of my producers, and he goes, hey, we now have this cabin that we could use in the middle of the woods. And at the time, I was writing the script with my friend Lorenzo, and once the cabin was introduced, I was like, okay, there's too many new things that was brought on to us right now that we could now use for this movie. So I decided to scrap the script that we were working on and start all over. This time I worked on it by myself, and I did take some elements from our previous script and sort of moved it on to this one. But it was very tough, especially when we were working on the original one. Writing a script with someone else is very difficult. Lorenzo is a fantastic writer. It's just, you know, as artists, you come to find yourself with a lot of conflicting ideas, especially if you're very passionate about what you're writing.
One of your characters in the film is suffering from depression. What made you want to focus on that topic in your screenplay?
Depression is something that I have dealt with in my life, and it is something very easy for me to draw inspiration from, especially when it comes to art. I was told by someone recently that a lot of my art is very dark, that a lot of my songs that I've written are very emotional, and, you know, my last album that I put out, Lyrical Gohan, really talked about the depression that I had dealt and was dealing with and was overcoming. And I think that's also what drew me into Silent Hill, is just Silent Hill, at least its lore, it was just a visual manifestation of someone's depression. And I think that there's a lot of room to explore with characters who are troubled, who are, you know, not your just typical person who gets themselves involved in a horror situation. I think there's a lot more to explore when you're dealing with depression within a character. Like, just think about the movie Hereditary. The main character of that movie is a mother who is just not well, and her being in that state of mind adds to the tension and to the horror, the scariness that is the film outside of the monsters and spooky stuff that's going on.
What has the casting process been like?
The casting process it's very difficult. At least it was at first, because when you're making an indie film, you're trying to really limit the amount of money that you want to spend. So hiring actors is very tough. So one of the ways that I was able to work around this was, I was like, who do I know that has the most experience being on screen, that has acting experience? And fortunately, being involved in film production for about 11 years now and just traveling to New York and to LA, I've met a lot of actors. I have a lot of friends who go to acting school, currently taking classes. My best friend and one of my fellow musicians, Adam, is a fantastic actor. He's been in several commercials, and throughout our 2012-2016 era of making videos, like, I've never seen someone just transform themselves on camera like he did. And we always kind of had this dynamic of him being the star and me being the director. So when I came up with this movie, he was the first person that I saw in the role as the main character, Zach. So he plays the main character. And when I honestly said, I was like, you know what, if I can't have you in this movie, I'm going to write a different movie for someone else. Because, like, he was just that good. I also made a promise to him when he put aside making music and focusing on his art to go back to school. I told him that when I get this chance to hit that home run for us, I would reach out to him. And I did. And then the rest was easy. I just reached out to my friends who had acting experience, and I said, hey, I can't pay you, you know, provide you a place to stay and a trip up to Wyoming to work on the really fancy film. Are you interested? Everybody said yes. Lucky me.
Now, on your GoFundMe page, I saw some of the pictures from that Wyoming location. What made you choose that location for the film?
So what drew us to this location was really what was available to us. So the production house that is housing the equipment that we're using to be able to make this movie is located in Wyoming. So when I saw the area of where we would have to go to be able to film any kind of movie, I said, okay, this is what this place looks like. It's isolated, it's in the mountains,
There's a cabin in the woods that we can take advantage of. What kind of story can I tell in a location like that? And that's really what it was. So the location was presented to us first, and then from there I crafted a story around what we had available for us to use. But if I were to take that apart and answer it in a way where, not making it sound like that was our only choice, but, you know, if you're going to do a Silent Hill movie or a Silent Hill fan film, or if you're trying to capture the spirit or feel of that property, Wyoming is a perfect place. It's beautiful. It's haunting in a way where, you know, if you're in the mountains and there's some fog and the right kind of lighting and atmosphere, you can really create some spooky cinematography there. And as a cinematographer myself, I think being able to film at this location is really just going to allow us to flex our muscles when it comes to the visual department. Like, it's a scary movie, but the movie is going to look very beautiful. And I think that's an advantage that we have over us, was really this location is just phenomenal. So, yeah, I'm hoping we're able to, you know, utilize it as best as we can to be able to build on the atmosphere we already have.
What were some of the challenges that you experienced during pre-production?
That's certainly a great question. So some of the challenges that we experienced during pre-production was really, because this is our first indie film, was learning about pre-production, mapping everything out, making sure that everything is coordinated, make sure that everything is graphed out and documented appropriately. This is our first indie film, so there is a lot of learning curves, and there is a lot of stepping stones that we had to overcome to be able to at least get this far. There were also a lot of people who were involved, and for one reason or another, they decided to leave. Then we had to find replacements. And I think probably the biggest issue was, you know, was just raising enough money for this movie to be able to create something that we're proud of. And hopefully with the execution of this project, we can also show the industry that we are all capable filmmakers. And I think that's the ultimate goal of this project, was just to create something that's of quality to be able to show the industry what we're made of.
You recently posted on the To Go Gang Production Company's official YouTube channel the Maiden Makeup Test video. What made you want to go for that look for the creature in the film?
We wanted to stick to the look and feel of Silent Hill and also use what its influences come from, like a lot of creepypasta drawings and monsters from Jacob's Ladder. So our monster came from the idea of, without spoiling the story, the monsters all come from things that happen in the story. So, for instance, there's an implication that one of the characters is in a coma, and the monster that we created was we have three monsters. One of them is a hospital patient, walks around with like an IV pole. Then we wanted to create an alternative to the nurse. We wanted to take the nurse and sort of mix her with Lisa from Silent Hills, aka PT, and create this maiden figure that works more as like a ghost than a zombie like app character that, like, which is the nurse. So the nurse, I feel like in Silent Hill, works more as like a zombie. She's like, you know, don't point the light at her. She's attracted to the light. If you get too close, they'll cut her. You know, Lisa and PT, you never knew when Lisa was going to show up. She was always following you from behind. So we wanted to have a blend of those. And then the third monster, which is, I can't recall the name right now. I think it's called the Black Melody. The third monster is basically, so this monster comes from the damage that was done to Silent Hill's forest. So the characters are responsible for a fire that happened in one of the places that they're at. So this is like the forest demon, and it looks basically like a female tree looking figure with horns everywhere, and she's a faceless monster. I wish I had, if we were doing video, I'd show you the picture that we have, but we're going to post more pictures within the next couple days, because like I said, we begin filming in 9 days. There's a couple monsters that you're going to see here. We even have a cameo from a giant bunny that is being considered. So we shall see. Mr. Rob the Rabbit. Robbie the Rabbit.
The project was originally started on Kickstarter but abandoned. What made you decide to pull the plug on the Kickstarter campaign and do a GoFundMe instead?
The Kickstarter was my first time using it. We were looking for a platform to accept more of donations to be able to help with the travel expenses and getting food while we were there. And once we set the Kickstarter at $7,000, we were not able to adjust it. So if we didn't reach our goal, we wouldn't have been able to keep our donations. So what we did was we just switched over to GoFundMe and we contacted everybody and just basically transferred it over to there because it became an easier platform for us to receive money.
What are the release plans for this film?
The release plans as of now, we're looking at a teaser trailer to be ready by Halloween. The movie shall be out by fall of 2022. If I were to be realistic, we're looking possibly for an October release date. It's going to be on Amazon. There are other platforms being looked on, which would possibly include On Demand, Vudu, iTunes. We're contacting a distributor to be able to get us on those other platforms. But as of now, Ash will be exclusively on Amazon fall of 2022.
Any plans for a physical release?
Depending on the success of this movie, we will do a physical release. It just depends on the amount of attention and how much people want it. I think once we create this movie and show people what we are capable of, if we were to ever work on a sequel and to maybe continue telling other stories within this spiritual successor to Silent Hill, then maybe we can do a compilation where, you know, we direct a couple more of these and then bundle them all together.
How can they find more information on this film and the production of it?
You can find more information on this film at asilenthill.com. You could also visit the social media A Silent Hills on Instagram. I think that's where we're most active. Let me double check if that is the name. Yeah, A Silent Hills. We've been posting almost every day. We've been posting behind the scenes videos on the Instagram. We went to a costume store today to be able to look at the potential Robbie the Rabbit outfit. So the Instagram is where you really want to, you know, keep looking at the behind the scenes. AsilentHill.com right now is just set up for you to be able to access the social media and a quick link to go over towards our GoFundMe. So if you also want to support the movie, you could visit asilenthill.com and there will be a link right up there at the top.
Jackson, I want to thank you for coming on to my podcast.
Anthony, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. Honestly, I can't wait to send you this movie. You're going to be one of the people who gets early eyes on it, and your support means the absolute world to us. So on behalf of myself and everybody on this project, thank you. Thank you for having us on.
You're welcome, and have a good day.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
This is Carrie.
This is Billy.
This is Mr. Bo.
And we are from A Podcast from Beneath. You can catch us every Wednesday wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
You'll find Anthony T's horror and wrestling show on these social media platforms. On Facebook, Instagram, and the Slasher app at Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling. And on Twitter at Anthony T's Horror. You'll find new episodes on DarkDiscussions.com, major podcast providers, and YouTube. What's Anthony T watching in this episode? Well, yours truly, at the beginning of this episode, talked about CM Punk. Since I talked about CM Punk, it also happens that he has a new movie out on Blu-ray and DVD, in which he has a small supporting role in. And an interesting note about CM Punk here with this film is, this is the second time that he works with director Travis Stevens, as he had a much bigger role in Travis Stevens' last film, The Girl on the Third Floor, which was released last year. It's a very good film. Definitely check it out. Let's move on now to Travis Stevens' latest film, Jacob's Wife. And this is a film that stars Barbara Crampton, Larry Fessenden, and Bonnie Ahrens. This was a great vampire film. Seriously. This film definitely had my attention when it was a vampire film. And vampires are usually a favorite subgenre of mine. So if it's like a vampire film, most likely I'm probably going to see this film. No matter what. Unless if it's Twilight, of course. Because I can't stand sparkling vampires. I'm sorry. They set the vampire genre back 10 years. But back to Jacob's Wife. This was a very good film. One of the reasons why I thought this was a very good film was Travis Stevens' direction. I like how the way he directs his cast in this film, as he does a very good job making sure that the cast has chemistry with each other. I like how the fact that both Barbara Crampton and Larry Fessenden does a very good job making sure they had great chemistry with each other, as I really thought both of their performances in this film is great. This is definitely, I think, one of Barbara Crampton's best performances to date. She really does a great job here in the lead in this film. She really makes sure that her character is very empowered, very conflicted. She really, I think, does a great job in this film and really helps carry this film. It also helped that she had a very good screenplay as well, as I really thought the screenplay was very good. I like the fact that Stevens and co-screenwriters Kathy Childs and Mark Steensland does a very good job making sure that everything works very well. I like how they explore the main relationship in the film, as this is about a couple whose marriage is pretty much going nowhere and in some ways starting to crumble. I like how they really do a great job focusing on that relationship throughout the course of the film. I also like how the way the screenplay develops the action here, as there's some very good vampire action in this film. This is one of those vampire films where it gets very bloody very quickly, and it's done in a way that it's frightening and in a way that it's enjoyable to watch. Another thing that I really liked about this film was the gore effects. I like how Stevens and his team of special effects artists do a very good job making sure that he has the effects for the vampire scenes. Every time you had a vampire scene in this film, it was very bloody. And for vampire films to be very good, in my opinion, they can either have atmosphere or it has to be really bloody to the point where it's a credible vampire film, in my opinion. And this film really delivers on blood, as this is probably one of the gory vampire films I've seen in quite a while. I like how the action develops very well. They also really, I think, did a great job with making sure the look of the main vampire had a frightening feel to it, as it kind of had a kind of Salem's Lot kind of feel to it. You could also throw Nosferatu as well, as that lead vampire really looked very creepy. And I like the fact that this relies more on practical creepiness for the look of the vampires than something that's CGI'd to make very scary. Jacob's Wife is a very entertaining film here, as this film has great performances from Larry Fessenden and Barbara Crampton, as both of those actors really helped make this film very good on top of a very good screenplay. This is definitely one vampire film you should definitely check out, as this is currently on DVD, Blu-ray, VOD, and will be hitting Shudder this month. Definitely check out Jacob's Wife, as this is a very good vampire film, as this film definitely has bite to it. It may not be the traditional vampire film, but this film has bite. And definitely check this film out for the vampire action and the performances of Larry Fessenden and Barbara Crampton. Definitely check Jacob's Wife out. It's a very good vampire film. On Anthony T's Horror and Wrestling Show on YouTube, you can find a new video up where I talk about my displeasure over WWE and their release of Bray Wyatt. This was one that I could not put on the podcast, because quite frankly, I was so pissed off about this release, because it's so mind-boggling that Bray Wyatt got released by WWE, even though he's one of their biggest merch sellers. And I don't buy the fact it's budget cuts, because I think something is happening in WWE, maybe in the next couple years. But this does not sound like it's budget cuts, as I have a theory on that as well. Check the video out. On the next vlogcast, as I've got a lot of stuff from the VS, Severin, and Criterion sales that I picked up recently. Now, I originally was going to do a VS video, but it didn't come out great, so I decided to cancel it. But I will include some of the VS titles that I picked up during the halfway the Black Friday sale in the next vlogcast video, which should be up later this month. And I also will have a movie review up on the YouTube channel this month as well, as I'm going to bring that back, so keep an eye out for that. Also, another Dead Kids of Derry podcast will be dropping on Spotify, as me and the gang do an audio commentary track for Salem's Lot as we visit good old sunny California, Maine. That should be dropping soon on Spotify over on the Dead Kids of Derry channel. Please subscribe to that podcast as well. The episode will be up soon if it isn't already. With that, I want to thank you for listening to this episode. Have a good day. Support indie wrestling and indie horror.